turn again to Matthew 5. He finished that psalm on the thought that blessed are ye when men persecute you, and how nobly the martyrs of the Christian faith have demonstrated the blessedness of suffering for the cause of Jesus Christ. Now, that's the inwardness of the life that God congratulates. The outwardness is described in the next paragraph, verses 13 through 16, which I'd like us to ponder a little this morning. Ye are the salt of the earth. But if the salt has lost its savour, wherewith shall the earth be salted? The salt is thenceforth good for nothing, but to be cast out, and to be trodden under foot of men. Ye are the light of the world. A city is set on a hill, and cannot be hid. Neither do men light a candle and put it under a bushel, but on the candlestick, and it giveth light unto all that are in the house. Let your light so shine before men, that they may see your good works, and glorify your Father which is in heaven. It was always a great privilege when I was on a preaching trip to take a couple of students with me. And we used to have the delightful habit of bowing all conversation except on a verse of choice. And if we had a 2 hour, maybe a 3 hour run, it was amazing what we found out as we prayed together and we chatted together about that verse. I don't know how many times we set ourselves the task of taking these statements of the Lord and putting them under our tongue and then sort of giving them a lick every 4 or 5 minutes to see what new colour they would come out. You know those all-day suckers. You put them in and they're red. After a while your tongue is red but the lolly's green. And after a while your tongue is purple. And the little lolly's yellow. After a while your tongue is any old colour, incredible colour. And the lolly's gone white. But the wonderful thing is that when the Lord made statements, they were in aphoristic form. An aphorism is a great truth shrunk down and down and down and down until it becomes a shining gem. And the Lord took some of the most mighty statements, some of the most wonderful truths, and polished them down until they became gleaming gems. And it's your privilege and mine to take these gems of his quintessence of truth and to turn them round so that the light falls on different facets. And you'll find that they gleam with the brightness of the rainbow. Every colour's there. And I would like to suggest that in your quiet times, or maybe at some other time, that you think about these two twin truths all this week. Then maybe next week I won't need to talk to you. Oh, you'll be able to teach me instead. Wouldn't that be lovely? Oh, that really would fan my heart. But you think for all of this week, whenever you get a chance, and ask the Lord to reveal to you what he meant when he said that our influence in the world, if our hearts were right with God, if the Spirit of God possessed us, then he said we would be to the world both salt mind in Bolivia, who seem to know everything. Beware of people who know everything. Oh, they're dangerous. And we were given a pig. People will give you some strange things. We were given a pig, and he was sure he knew how to kill a pig. Oh, I was very thankful about that. And he knew how to make pickled pork. So when you don't have a refrigerator and you have a whole pig to dispose of, it's important to get that thing properly pickled. He said he knew how to make ham. You pickle the thing, and he had all the proportions right. We threw it all out because he didn't put enough salt in the brine. And instead of the pickled pork making hams and bacons, and all it made was decomposition. My friends, what happens to the world around you? Is it preserved, or does it still decompose? If you and I are to be cathartic, cleansing, healing, preservatizing, then we'll only be that to the extent that the soul stops being soul and becomes part of the whole situation. Soul on a shelf is useless. It is only as the soul loses its uniqueness. It's only as it loses its isolation, that's the word I wanted, and becomes saturated into the situation, that it affects the purpose for which God intended it. There is a sense that we are to be in the world. And my friends, we need to be praying all the time, Lord, help me to find a point at which my life can impinge on the world in terms of making it a little more savory, a little more zestful. Little girl was asked what salt is. Oh, she said, Mummy, that's what makes porridge nasty when you leave it out. And I wonder whether the situation is a little more zestful, a little more palatable, because you were in that situation. Ye are the salt of the earth. One time I traveled 50 miles on mulebank from Aki to San Pedro. We did this in a 3-day journey, because the Bolivian mountains are very high. Some of the passes are at 16,000 feet. And your teeth rattle around in your head, even if they're natural teeth. There isn't any grass on the ground. There isn't any rain. There isn't anything. It's just bare rock and ice. But up there above the cloud level is where the Bolivians get their rock salt. At the end of the first day's journey, I was just about ready to be mummified. I was so cold. And I knocked on various doors of the little village of Iterata. And finally, one dear lady opened up and let me in. And I said to her, could she possibly make me some soup? Which the dear old soul was kind enough to do. She got paid for it too, I might say. But as she was making the soup, she got some dried meat down from the rafters, some dried potatoes out from under the bed. And she found in the corner somewhere in the dark, these tears were streaming down my face because the fire is always made in the middle of the floor, And of course the smoke goes everywhere. The only way you can keep your eyes out of the smoke is to lie horizontally on the ground. And even then it finally gets down to you. But anyway, there we were, and I saw the dear lady take a great big piece of salt that size and put it on the grindstone, and she pounded it up and put a handful of it in the soup and stirred it up. And she put another handful in. I thought, boy, it's not gonna, it can't have much other flavor besides salt. And so she's going to make it rich and rare with salt. There's nothing else in it. Finally, the soup was ready. And I was poured out in the little wooden bowls in which we had it. And it was scarcely salty enough. Finally, after she poured the last bowl of soup out, she went to the door, climbed over the frog-proof doorstep, which is about 18 inches high, and flung the rest of it out the door. And then I realized that that little white path out the front there was the result of many years of throwing out the spare salt. And this might be most curious, how you could put four handfuls of salt in one pot of soup and not make it too salty, and how come there was quite a little path, a little white path up to the door. And then she showed me the salt. My friends, it looked exactly like real salt, like genuine solid rock salt. But the Indian who had brought this salt and exchanged it for grain had got it from too near the level of the country where it starts to rain. And this is a slow process, ever so slow, incredibly slow, by which the salt is leaked down and replaced with lime. And so you see, although it looked like salt, it still had the salt crystalline structure. It had every appearance of being the real thing. I don't suppose it was steeper than salt. The Lord said, this must be the same situation in Palestine. You see, how can salt lose its flavor? By slowly replacing the salt with lime. And my friends, if you and I live too near the world where the world leaches out the real salt, you'll find that there will be a slow replacive process by which the salt is substituted with something that's utterly worthless. The Lord said, if the salt has lost its flavor, it's good for nothing. The only purpose it can possibly serve is that it be thrown out and to be trodden under the foot of man. I've seen that very thing happen, and I'm sure you know people too whose lives have lost their tang. They have lived so near the world that they have lost their favor. Oh, our daily prayer should be, Lord, keep me pure salt. Let me disappear in the situation so that it's vessel, so that it's flavorsome, so that it's cleansed, so that it's healed, that it's preserved. Ye are the salt of the earth. Who are the ye? Those that congratulate the by God because they're holy, because they have an appetite for his word, because of all these things that we've been considering before. Now, if salt is useless on the shelf, light is useless in the soup. Do you get the point? We're to be in the world, but not of it. life is useless. If you drop it into the soup, all it does is fizz and go out. Light is only valuable in terms of being separated from the situation that which it illuminates. Now, Matthew says, neither do men light a candle and put it under a bushel. Of course, the higher critic has his own explanation as to why Mark got it wrong. Because Mark said, don't hide it under the bed. And Luke was silly enough to say something different. He said, don't hide it in a secret place. Now, obviously, as these people copied from each other, they were pretty poor copyists. Or were they? My friends, when I hear the higher critics and their cranky explanations, I say to myself, it'd be lovely if they stopped and thought sometimes, maybe the Lord has said all three things. He was capable of it. Neither do men light a candle and put it under a bushel. But my friends, I've seen these Indians, when they're selling corn for salt, they use a bushel measure. And some of the rascals are as wicked as Australians. And as cunning too. What they do is sort of jab a bit of green stick into the fire, and there's an oven, there's an instantaneous fog in the room. They put the light way up the other end of the room and turn their back on that. So, in the murky darkness, they dish out the maize. But before they put the maize in the bushel measure, what do? They put a great big stone at the bottom. You didn't see that. Nobody saw that. You were supposed to see that. That's what you call sharp business. And then, of course, they fill it up and round it up, full measure, press down, running over, hold the neck of your bag open, and as they pour it in, they drop the stone onto the floor again, and he relaxed custom. And they work it out that, well, I didn't give him as much maize as he thought he got, but then he didn't give me as much salt as he said he did either, because he'd have lost it. So the cheater is cheating, and they keep on cheating each other. What the Lord was saying is, you and I should never be guilty of a business transaction where we do not allow the light of God's truth to shine upon us. Now what about the bed? Neither do men light a candle and put it under the bed. That's exactly what the Lord said. This is the domestic situation. If only I could take you to Bolivia, I wouldn't need to tell you this at all. There's his home. It consists of a little fire in the middle of the floor, bushel measure, and a bed. Total of furniture. The bed is made of mud. Underneath these various portals, you keep the dried potatoes, the guinea pigs, and this was reserved for Junior when he's working. He's pushed under there in order that he might have a change of mind. Now, when you're getting dinner ready, you've got to catch those wretched little guinea pigs, and they don't have any tail. So, you really get under there and get by and grab them round the neck. But while Mum's under the bed catching a guinea pig, there's total darkness in the house. I don't know any place where it's harder to live in the blaze of the glory of God than in your own home. Do you? We can be wonderful saints when we're out on tour. We're not too bad when the professors are around the BDI. But when we get home, everybody knows us, and we know everybody, so we let our hair down. And the darkness comes down too. He said, don't hide the light under the bed. And Luke says, the Lord said also, we're not to hide the light in the secret place. Now, I looked at these little Indian huts 100 times. There's nowhere you could keep a secret there. But the only thing they have by way of cupboards is little holes in the walls where the mud didn't quite fill up between the stones. Don't put your fingers in there, or spiders will bite you. Well, where's your secret place? You say to him, tell me your secret place. And he's quite distressed that you even asked him. But if you won his confidence, he'll take you outside. And there, outside, right outside of the house, there's a little tiny hut made of moon juice, which are kind of solid bamboos. It wouldn't be any bigger than from here to where these first girls are sitting. It has no normal door. You have to unstrap the side in order to get in. And when you finally get in, you see the floor is up above the ground, about 2 feet. It's very clean. And he always takes his candle when he goes there. And what do you see? A little pile of potatoes here. A little pile of wheat here. A little pile of maize here. These are the seeds for next year's crop. And he very lovingly picks up the potatoes to see that the wild ones are not getting at them. He looks at the wheat and the corn to see that the weevils are not eating out the germ. Next year's crop depends on his keeping the secret place free of vermin. My friends, what I am in my heart today, I will be visibly tomorrow. Let's never hide the Word of God from the secret place of the heart. For out of the hidden places of the heart, you are producing tomorrow's habits and next day's character and the following day's destiny. May God, that the light of His love, the light of His word, the light of His truth, the light of His understanding, the light of His concern will be seen in every deal that we have, in every relationship that we have. And most of all, that the light of God will glow brightly in the secret place of the heart. For it is there that we truly live.